This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, one and all. This is Out to Lunch, the destination for big name guests who want to eat wonderful food whilst chatting to yours truly. This week, I am joined across the table by someone who made her Broadway debut in The Killing of Sister George in the late 60s and still fills theatres over there to the rafters. Over here, she is due to star opposite Timothée Chalamet in 4,000 Miles at the Old Vic next year. She co-created Upstairs, Downstairs in the House of Elliot and on screen has starred in The Crown, Gosford Park, Cold Mountain, Doc Martin, and even Paddington 2. We talk about catching a lift home with Laurence Olivier, being propositioned by a significantly younger Hollywood star, and turning down a role opposite DiCaprio. It is, of course, the magnificent Dame Eileen Atkins. Didn't you steal a lift home with Laurence Olivier
every night?
Every night, because even though he wasn't going anywhere near where you lived.
Yes, and then he caught me out, and it was awful.
For this episode of Out to Lunch, I have come to the Aldwych in London. You can hear it rattling past because it's the site of one of, well, Theatreland's great restaurants, which is the Delaunay. It's owned by the same group that has the Wolseley and Zadel and so forth. The Delaunay is a Theatreland institution, and so is Dame Eileen Atkins. It felt like a perfect fit. Let's go inside.
Oh, I never knew about this.
You never knew there was a private dining room at the Delaunay?
No.
Hello, Alice.
Hello, Jay.
You come here quite regularly.
I do come here quite a lot because Jonathan Kent is a friend of mine. It's his favourite restaurant.
Have a seat.
I've not seen my book. Can I have a look at it?
You haven't seen a proof?
No.
Oh, my.
That's
there you go.
Proof.
I'm going to show you a photograph because I think it's important that people know you're not just someone I'm interviewing, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm linked.
You're very linked. I mean, you knew my dad longer than my mother knew my dad.
Really? Yes, I did. Of course, I did.
Of course you did.
I remember always worrying that your father would find somebody who was right for him. I can remember thinking that at drama school.
So. Well, you have a picture in the book of you in panto.
Yes.
And it's Mother Goose.
Yeah.
But we've got another pic, which is the walk down at the end. So if you have a look, there's
you. And your dad is there, is he?
He's two down from you, so it's annotated. You can see you.
Oh, yes, I can see Des. I didn't need to know that. I knew that was Des straight away, just from the way he was standing, wishing he was playing the devil.
But he's playing some sort of forest outlaw type.
God.
In the book, or in your story, you tell your story of being a working-class girl from Tottenham.
Yeah.
Having sugar sandwiches for lunch.
Yes.
And now we're in the private dining room of the Delaunay, surrounded by oak panelling. And you've said you had not just a chip, but a whole bleeding block on your shoulder about class.
Mm-hmm.
Is that gone? We moved on?
If it hasn't now, I mean, I'm interested to read. They're now taking so many children from working class and giving them special help to get to universities and things like that. I mean, I'm up for all those things, and I keep an eye out for them. But yes, I have nothing to complain about now.
You've described that childhood and your mother sort of getting you out dancing in clubs for the delectation of men when you were just a child.
Yes.
You've used the word paedophilia many, many times, as though there was this thing of men being attracted to prepubescent girls dancing around their pants.
They are. What can I tell you? They are.
This is Linda.
Hello, Linda.
It's lovely to meet you. Hello.
Shall we order?
Yes, I would like the quinoa and avocado salad to start with.
Marvellous.
And then I'd like eggs benedict, please.
Would you like a large or a small? One or two?
I think just one.
Excellent.
I'm a very old woman.
And I'll have the smoked salmon and then the Berner Würstel, which is a very grand name for a sausage.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And do you want a glass of wine?
I would, yes. What would go? I have no idea what would go. You'd have to tell me what
some
might
sort of
go
crisp
with.
Crisp white. Have you got a Chablis by the glass?
Yes, we do.
Have a Chablis, two Chablis by the glass.
How lovely.
Clearly, from your descriptions of it, you liked being on the stage. You liked, even though, and I know you won't take this the wrong way, it sounds like quite a naff little act.
Oh, you can say that easily. It was an amazingly naff little act. I like the attention, but at some point I do point out that, honestly, I didn't like being got up to go out to the clubs terribly.
Well, one of the other striking things about your story is your formal education is a sort of scattergun affair, mm-hmm. with you paying attention, then not paying attention, and that if it hadn't really been for the great English teacher at your secondary school, is it E.J. Burton, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was fabulous, yeah.
That you wouldn't be the person, the actress that you are. Is that fair to say?
I owe everything to... I'm going to start crying just saying it. I owe everything to that man. I really do. And every day I'm grateful that he picked me up and took some interest in me.
Oh, starters are arriving. So that's the salmon for me and the avocado and quinoa salad for you. One of the striking things about you, I'm going to keep saying, you know, striking things about you, but is...
Strike mates.
You are obsessed by the text.
Obsessed. You should be trying to work out exactly what the writer meant. And it'll be different each time anyway, because there'll be different people doing it. I hate the directors who sit and think, what can I do with this?
Have you had rows with directors over that sort of thing over the years?
Yes.
You know, it was clear that you had a massive falling out with Peter Hall
beginning. Oh, God, that was sad. That was my fault, really. That really was my fault.
Obviously he went on to have a lengthy career. He ran the National. What did you do?
It said in my contract at Oxford...
This is the Oxford Playhouse,
yes, isn't it? Yes, ASM and small parts, and I didn't get any small parts. But I was, I paid dearly for that outburst of anger.
Did you ever rectify this?
He didn't employ me until I was 57.
And to put this in context, your first experience with him would have been very early 20s, wouldn't it?
I was 19.
19.
No, I've still got a temper.
Well, you've said that. You also said that both your parents died in the middle of a rage.
Mm. They both lost their tempers easily. My father said to my mother, those dustmen, tell them to bring the dustbin down the side of their house. And they don't do it, do they? So I'm going to have to go and do the dustbin. And he went out and then didn't come in again. And my mother thought, he's still out there. Went out and he was had a heart attack over the dustbin, was dead. And my mother was in hospital and got into a rage because she'd been there for a week with flu. She was 94 in the hospital, so she was absolutely fine and was sending her home. My sister was with her and packing her little case to go home. That week, I was in the film that was chosen as the Royal Command performance of The Dresser. And they...
The great Ronald Harwood play adapted.
Yeah. At the last minute, we were all told it was the premiere and we were all going to be introduced to the Queen and everything. They took me out of the lineup because I wasn't well enough known by the public and put my friend Jean Marsh in instead.
Can we just be clear what year this was? I'm going to say 87. So significantly deep into your career.
Mm. And she suddenly went into one of her rages with my sister and said, wasn't that a damn shame that our Eileen didn't get to meet the Queen? And I brought in that Jean Marsh instead. And my sister, she didn't know anyone could die so quickly. She just collapsed over the suitcase and was dead. I thought it was a great...
That's a good way to die,
great
isn't it?
Great way to go.
But also, there's no doubt that your mother imbued you with certain of her own ambitions.
Mm.
And she goes out being livid that you haven't had the...
I disappointed her. I did disappoint her all the time, because she got herself ready to have this child who was in musicals and pantos and things like that. I started spouting Shakespeare. She didn't like it at all.
As I say, you go through many different types of production, many different types of company,
mm-hmm.
some terrible, some awful, mm-hmm. some great,
mm-hmm.
some which were basically bed-hopping, as far as I can tell.
One was, yes.
You land a part with Laurence Olivier.
Mm.
When that happened, did you think, now I've arrived?
Yes.
How was he? What was he like?
Oh, he was... I was in love with him. I mean, he was heavenly.
What was the play? Remind me. It was
called Semi-Detached.
But I got the impression that, really for you, the best entertainment was Who Came Back stage.
Oh, God.
When Larry
was... the first time I was acting with somebody that... I mean, I can remember Elizabeth Taylor coming... and then immediately me stealing on lift with him afterwards always. And him, I said, I could only see the top of her head. And he said, she has the most beautiful coloured eyes in the world. And everyone came. Rex Harrison came to see that and got me a job on a record. You never know who's in the audience.
Didn't you steal a lift home with Laurence Olivier most...
Every night,
because even though he wasn't going anywhere near where you lived?
Yes, and then he caught me out, and it was awful.
You did a whole thing about walking, getting dropped off and walking down to...
some friends of mine, and you say, oh, no, I just walked down to these...
How long were you getting a lift with Larry Olivier?
Before he
clocked.
I think I had lifts for 3.5 months before he...
By then, were you married to Julian?
I was married to Julian then,
right,
yeah.
Then you say your first husband, Julian Glover. I always feel the need to put full names for people who aren't clocking. Who you will have seen if you're of a certain age in Game of Thrones, which seems a terrible way to list Julian's credits. But
well, Julian is somebody who does frightfully... I mean, he's been in all these iconic things. I've never been in an iconic thing, ever. That he's been done Game of Thrones, Doctor Who, he's been in the... 007, what are they called? I've never
James
seen
Bond.
I've never seen a James Bond.
You've never seen a James Bond?
No, I don't like... I saw a bit of one and couldn't bear it. I tried to watch the one with Judy.
Oh, I was going to say, what if Judy Dench comes in as...
I had to try and watch that. 10 minutes, I thought, I can't stand this. I can't bear screeching of brakes and cars flying.
Oh, like I live
that.
For
I
it.
Just can't bear it. So I've never seen a James Bond. And when Julian got a James Bond, we'd just been divorced a few years, I think, when he got that. And he called me up, because we're very friendly, he called me up to say, you won't believe it, I've got a James Bond movie. I've had another. And I said, so it'll be you that we're watching on Boxing Day in 3 years' time, will it?
So Julian was in For Your Eyes Only, for anybody who's wondering.
Oh, For Your Eyes Only.
Yes. I'm going to jump around a bit, but even at the point in...
Killing of Sister George
with Beryl Reid, mm. which has an interesting story in that, where you describe it, it pretty much seemed to die when it was going around the big regional theatres.
It was a disaster. Really weird, you know, to think you're in an absolute disaster and then on the first night suddenly
in
realise
London.
You're in a... Yes, and Michael Codrum was very, very...
He was the producer. For anybody who doesn't know what The Killing of Sister George is about, it's also quite groundbreaking because it was about a lesbian couple.
Mm. It's the first lesbian play. I mean, there'd been the American play that The Children's Hour, where they'd glanced on it and you could make your own mind up about it, but there's no making your own mind up about... It was a very... wasn't a great play by any means, but it was a very daring play for its time.
It also suddenly made people look at Beryl Reid in a different way. I think when you were told that it was going to be her, you were a bit suspicious because she had a history as a comedienne.
Well, she was very funny to rehearse with because, you know, whenever we discussed a scene, she used to say, oh, if you two are going to talk, I'll go and make a phone call. And it was a scene between us, you know. But I loved her. I simply adored her. We were friends for the rest of her life. I simply doted on her. She was... And she was wonderful in Smiley's People and Yeah, well, Smiley Speaks.
Is it true that she couldn't work out a character unless she got the shoes right?
Yeah, that was her. There are some people like that, and I don't go by the thing, but she used to say that. Maybe that was true for her.
When you and Jean Marsh created Upstairs, Downstairs, it was definitely from the perspective of people who knew a little bit about service, i.e. the below stairs.
Yes.
Because your dad was in service.
My dad was in service and her mum was in service.
And her mum was... So that was the side of it. The book that you've written stops at 66 with the killing of Sister George. And there is but one paragraph on Upstairs, Downstairs, which you created with Jean.
Well, because that was after that, you see.
So I'm kind of curious as to why you wanted to stop at that point. Your publisher has put Act One of A Life on Stage.
Well, yes, she put that, yes.
I'm just wondering, well, firstly, how's Act Two coming?
No. The whole thing was that I said once I became known, I don't use the word... because I'm not famous.
Every single person I've told I was having lunch with you went, oh, she's marvellous.
They're very posh people who go to the right place. I find it very boring reading people's books and they say, and then I did this and got wonderful reviews and then I did that. Once you're in any way really successful, I think it's boring.
If not to read about, was it, do you think, slightly less exciting to become successful? In other words, was the struggle the most exciting bit?
I think the struggle is the exciting bit. I wanted to show how terribly difficult it is to get from the working class to classical acting.
And yet you created two very successful TV series.
I enjoy creating them.
Upstairs, Downstairs and House of Elliot.
Yeah. I'm very proud of them both.
You wrote a number of things. I mean, you wrote the script for Mrs. Dalloway.
Yes. Somebody said to me the other day, you mean you've written this book? OK, it was an adaptation, but I've also won a very nice prize for having written a film script.
Which one did you get?
I won the Evening Standard Best Film Award, but not even Best Adaptation, Best Film Script. I beat Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Did you? You beat Guy Ritchie.
I've never been so pleased to beat anyone in my life because they were so full of themselves that night. They'd won nearly everything. And they went, here we go, now we get this one. And I got it. I've never been so thrilled with an award in my life.
Awards are nice, aren't they?
They're fun, but you can, if you're still in a show with someone and you've won, they can be tricky.
Ah. You've had Tonys, you've had BAFTAs.
I've been nominated four times for a Tony.
Oh, but you've not won.
No, been very grateful twice that I hadn't won. Very grateful.
Why?
Because each time David Merrick had said to me, if you win, I'm extending the run.
And you didn't want to have to carry on?
No. And the awful thing was he caught me congratulating that I hadn't won. I got a real telling off.
For those who don't know, Dave Merrick is one of the great Broadway producers. Oh, Eggs Benedict has arrived, and doesn't it look beautiful?
Absolutely bloody perfect.
And I've got basically sausage and chips, kind of.
Up until 10 years ago, I'd done more plays in America than I'd done in England.
Well, you've said that you get bums on seats on Broadway, perhaps in a way that you feel you don't in the West End?
Mm.
Although, you know, Michael Billington, the great drama critic of The Guardian, has always sung your praises.
He hasn't always. When I started, I rather noticed that he didn't sing my praises. He was somebody who didn't. But then, well, never mind. Anyway, we're big friends now.
There's a particular phrase, sublime economy, which is the ability to not do too much.
I couldn't be praised more. I don't say I don't read the notices because they're too bloody important, mainly because people have got money into you.
So do you pay attention if there's a review that says, but, you know, Ms. Atkins is off her mark?
I've had one like that. When we were doing Semi-Detached, we were on tour in Oxford. The local Oxford Mail said something like, it wasn't terrible, but it was like saying, not good enough. And I went into the offices of the Oxford Mail and said, who wrote this?
You went to the newspaper office?
Yes.
To say who wrote this?
Yes. And so some poor shuddering man came towards me. And I said, well, what did you mean? Are you saying I'm not good enough? And he said, oh, does that read like that? And I said, yes, it does read like that. So I said, so what's wrong? What note would you give me? And of course he didn't have any note at all, because he was just writing any old thing and he'd never
bloody
heard.
Critics.
And he'd, yes. So that's the only time I've ever argued with that, because I realised that he didn't know what he was talking about. And I tended to think maybe the rest of them didn't. Of course, some of them do.
What about the stuff that comes with success?
I don't like all the things you have to do. And I'm terribly glad, no one will believe me in the world, but I'm terribly glad not to be highly visible.
You took part in that terrific documentary, Nothing Like a Dame.
Oh, yeah.
Which was you,
oh,
Maggie Smith.
None of us wanted to do it.
Judi Dench, Joan Plowright. I mean, there are some marvellous moments in there where you are all brilliantly grouchy with the producers and the people shooting it. Do we have to do more
awful,
of this?
Poor Roger,
you were
Michelle.
Awful people. You were seniority was exuding from every. It was what made it so fabulous.
We were all.
You were four old bags really giving it
yes,
to them.
Yes, it was in the end okay.
I'm just curious about the dynamic when the four of you were together. There was both love between the four of you, because you'd all worked together in different
yes.
formations.
Yes.
Actually, competition.
There is, it's always there.
There was a sort of running gag about every bloody part gets offered to Judi Dench first, and then everybody else gets a pick.
No, that's Maggie. Mag is a particular thing. There's been one part that...
One part that was you
that
wanted them.
That Judi got, and she'd done three movies that year, and I thought, oh, surely she'll miss that middle one. But she was brilliant in it, so I couldn't have done better, and that's the end of it. She played a lesbian who followed Kate Blanchett around, and I've totally forgotten.
Notes on a Scandal.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Hello, it's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Didn't you do something with Vanessa as well, Vanessa Redgrave, where you were told that, I'm hoping I'm not misremembering, if it's not Vanessa, this will be embarrassing, that the first thing you had to do was take all your clothes off. And you argued...
That wasn't Vanessa.
Who was it?
Glenda Jackson.
Well, enormous. And yes. You hesitated and wanted to argue, and by the time you turned around, Glenda had all her clothes off.
Yes, that's absolutely true. No, God, my admiration for Glenda is massive. I mean, I wouldn't be in it with her when she played Lear. I was offered Gloucester. And I said, no, thank you. Actually, what I said was, I will play Gloucester if Maggie Smith will play Kent. And the thought, and of course at the time I was imagining us all playing it in chainmail and things, and if I want to give myself a really good laugh, if I can't go to sleep, I think about us, me and Maggie in chainmail and armour plating, walking on stage and playing Gloucester and Kent. And that makes me laugh a great deal.
Against Glenda Jackson's King Lear.
Yes.
You said in an interview when you were doing Doubt in New York, you played a lot of nuns.
Oh,
can
yeah.
I say? You're
I
good
love
at a
the
nun.
Outfit. I almost take a part as a nun automatically because I so suit the outfit.
Queen Mary twice. Once, obviously, in The Crown, which is a spectacular turn.
I play a lot of royals, which is funny for a Cockney girl, isn't it? A lot of royals, and a lot of nuns.
A nun in Doubt. But one of the things in a particular interview there, where the part is an austere nun who is calling an errant cleric to account, a very Catholic thing. And you said to the director, I'm terrifying enough as a person. I don't mean to be. Don't tend to be, but I'm naturally terrifying. Do you think you are?
Well, people seem to be frightened, and I think people who have quick tempers, you can sort of... There's something about them that you feel might fly off in a minute. And I don't want to be. I really don't want to be frightening. I was in the middle of rehearsals, you know, before the lockdown for this play.
The 4,000 Miles with Timothy Chalamet.
Yes, and there were three of them. Three. He was 24, and then there were two lovely girls of 20-something. And, you know, I suppose I was so much older, they would be a bit nervous anyway. But we were just beginning... I was just beginning to break the age gap and make them not
see you as
not me. Just see me as.
Although it has to say the play is about a kid who goes to see his 91-year-old grandmother in upstate Connecticut. So
it is about age difference. Yes.
Yeah, it's about age difference, and you're slightly too young for the part. It has to be said, but still,
well,
they've
I
cast
might
you.
Just about get there by the time we do it.
What have you made of Timothy Chalamet so far?
Oh, he's terrific. I mean, he's terrific. He's a terrific actor. And, you know, people were saying, oh, but come and do it in theatre. He's done... The British are so insular. He's done two plays on or off Broadway in big theatres there. One of them was on Broadway. And he's you know, he's shown he can act on stage already. He doesn't have to come here. He just wanted to do the play and he wanted to do it here. He's terrific. If we ever get to do it, he's going to be wonderful.
I have to just bring up one story about you, which is the Colin Farrell story.
Oh, God. I went on Loose Women to promote something like Beckett, I think. It was something very serious. Those women sort of started to put on serious faces when I went on, you know. I said, and can you talk? And I looked at the audience, and it was a lot of jolly grey-haired women. And I thought, oh, God... They don't want to hear about Beckett. Just before I went on, they were all discussing and laughing about sex without strings. That had been the
subject. That had been the subject before you.
Yeah, before me. So I said, well, look, let's get on to serious acting talk. I said, I want to join in your talk that was going on before, which was sex without strings. And I'd like you all to know there's always a cheerful note for older people here. When I was just about to be 70, I was offered sex by a gorgeous young man, which I declined. And then, of course, they said, who was it? And I said, well, of course, I'm not going to tell you. By the time I reached home, the car got me home, there were journalists around my door.
Because they'd worked out who it had to be?
Yes. And at the end, these women kept saying to me, who was it, who was it? And one of them went straight. And, of course... They just had to work out where I was, what job I was doing, rang the agency and said, what job was Eileen Atkins doing? And for a whole year, I had not said anything about this encounter. And then this happened.
Which film were you doing with Colin?
Oh, it was a bad film. He won't mind me saying that. We both knew it was bad. It was called hit the dust? No. Bite the dust? No. Something the dust.
It's lost for dust. It's gone for dust.
It's gone for dust.
Had you just played a great scene together and it was the classic case of two act? No, I mean, when he propositioned you.
No, I was playing his landlady in this film in a grey wig. But I knew he had some kind of thing about me because the director, you'll know his name because he wrote Chinatown, Robert Towne.
Right.
Robert Towne asked me to do the part, and I said, no, I had no interest in going to South Africa and doing 2 weeks filming in a script I thought wasn't very good. And then my agent said, Robert Towne really wants to speak to you privately. And I thought, well, if the man who wrote Chinatown wants to speak to me privately, I'll go and speak to him. And he was a lovely man, Robert Towne. And he was directing this thing for an old friend. It was all people were doing a good turn, that's what happened. Yeah. And he said, I just don't want to do it. And he said, but Colin really wants you to. And I said, Colin who? And he said, Colin Farrell. And I didn't even know who he was. And he said, I'm going to give you a film. He said, you have never seen Colin's work. I said, no. And he gave me the film of Colin doing that film in the phone booth.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I thought...
Which is in real time. It's an extraordinary film.
Is brilliant. Mm. And I thought, well, they've all been so nice. This boy's obviously very clever. Robert Towne is really terribly nice and wrote Chinatown. Oh, for goodness sake, I didn't just go and do it. And then he really had wanted me to play.
I got the impression, I think you said somewhere, men were furious with him for thinking...
For fancying someone who was, non, as far as they were concerned, non-fanciable.
And the women were furious with you for not taking him up on it.
Yes. 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 No, he's a dear soul. I mean, I really do adore him, but he... I didn't. I was reading at the time Notes on a Scandal, thinking I might be going to do it. And he was so determined to stay in the room. He said, is this your bedtime reading? Okay, I'll read to you then.
Well, that's sweet.
Of Notes on a Scandal. No, he just... Well, there you are. We didn't. He is the most enchanting man. A real gentleman, as it turned out, because... You know, Jonathan Ross was sort of saying, why the hell her? When you, what about Helen Mirren? What about, the obviously sexy ones? And he just very sweetly sat there. So, but I've seen him since anyway. He came to my first night when I played the nun.
Right. When you played Doubt?
When I played Doubt on Broadway, after we'd done the movie, he came to my first night. I think he's a terrific actor. Just terrific.
You have turned down some pretty sexy roles. Didn't you turn down the part that Joanna Lumley took in The Wolf of Wall Street, the Martin Scorsese movie?
Yes, I did. I actually knew the producer very, very well. That probably why they thought of me for that. Yeah, I was doing the stage version of the Beckett play, All That Fall. And Scorsese absolutely couldn't understand why he simply left the play. And
come to do his movie.
And in fact... The producer I knew didn't understand that. Nobody understood. Nobody. It was like, but that's just a play that you're going to do off Broadway.
Doesn't that, in a way, almost sum up your career, Eileen? That you declined to do a Martin Scorsese movie, in which you would, salaciously I add, end up kissing Leo DiCaprio because you were much more interested in doing a Beckett play?
None of it. It was a brilliant film, I have to say. It was a great, great film. The producer of Women in Love was crazy about my work, Larry Kramer. And I was in France, and he asked me to come and meet Ken Russell. And I said I wouldn't come until I'd finished my holiday. I was with somebody wonderful. And I came to London and went in to see Russell, and he asked me how old I was, and I said 32, which I was at the time. And as I left the room, Larry came screaming out and said, why did you say you were 32? I said, because I am 32. And he said, oh, Ken's in there now saying, Yeah, I can see what you mean about her. She's right, but she's saying she's 32. That means she's 35 or 36, because they all lie. And when we get really out filming, we'll see that she's too old. I said, oh, if he's as silly as that, I don't want to work with him. And I went to San Francisco to be on a very interesting theatre project thing, and a man who I was very interested in was going to it too. And I was in San Francisco, and he said, come back, and he wants to test you. And I said, no, I'm not coming back to test. He never stopped saying to me, you know, you could have been a film star, but that's never been an interest of mine. People might say she should be so lucky. I'm happy to be in films from time to time, but it's not my interest. I don't enjoy it anything like, not remotely as much. And in fact, sometimes I truly detest it. And that was a wonderful movie too, Women in Love. It was a superb movie, and it made Glenda. And Glenda's been very clever though, because she's used, and brave, because she's used both. She's used the film and then gone back to the theatre from time to time. Well, there you are.
As we come towards the end of this, you've said that retirement isn't for you. You don't understand what that really means, and that working is where the pleasure is.
Yes, I'm beginning to think at 87 that I might be forced to retire. You know, are the words always going to stay in? You know, the minute I really am in trouble, I will stop.
I mean, 4,000 miles would be 8 performances a week, wouldn't it?
No, they very kindly had said I can only do 7.
Oh, that's an enormous reduction of the workload, and I'm sure you're grateful.
I'd learned it. Whether it'll ever come back again, I don't know. We'll see. Gielgud did it till he was 90-something. But then I remember saying to him how brilliant he was on the radio playing Lear. And he said, oh, no, I'm so slow now, so slow. And he just rippled it through, you know. You know, I don't want to be less than very good. So if my body stays with me and my brain stays with me, yes. But if it all starts...
Do you think you'll know?
No, I don't know. I wonder if anybody will be brave enough to tell me.
Well, you're terrified, so obviously not.
No, I'm too terrified. Right.
Well, look, I hope you've enjoyed a full sit-down.
Loved it.
And all that remains for me to say is, Dame Eileen Atkins, thank you for letting me take you out to lunch.
Thank you, Jay. It's been not only delicious, but a joy to be with you.
Lovely.
Long may she continue. Dame Eileen's new book is entitled Will She Do? Act 1 of A Life on Stage, and it really is a hell of a read. Thank you to the lovely people at the Delawney, which is on Aldwych near Covent Garden, London. Please share this podcast. We would appreciate it if you could give us, 5 stars and comment in glorious terms on Apple Podcasts. All that stuff really does help us to keep making more of them. Out to Lunch is a Something Else and Jay Rayner production. The music was written, arranged and performed by me, Jay Rayner, and Robert Rickenberg. The recording engineer was Paul Brogdon and the mix engineer was Josh Gibbs. Assistant producers are Anya Das and Bethany Hocken. The producer is Selena Ream and the executive producer is Darby Doris. Next time, it's comedian, actor, writer and producer Jack Whitehall.
I'd just like to go up on stage and just shit on myself for an hour and a half.